Today is Monday, September 7th, and this is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Coming up, the extradition hearing for WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange begins.
It's an oppression of journalism and free press everywhere in the Western world.
Also ahead, a crackdown on protests against Belarus's president. Plus, India overtakes Brazil as the country with the second most coronavirus cases worldwide. These stories and more are next. Our top story today, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange appeared in a London court on Monday to fight a U.S. extradition request at a high-stakes hearing that was delayed by the coronavirus pandemic. Charles de Ledesma of the Associated Press has more.
Assange, who spent almost a year and a half in a British prison, sat in the dock at the Old Bailey Criminal Court and formally refused the American extradition request. Several dozen supporters had gathered outside the courthouse before the hearing. American prosecutors have indicted the Australian on 18 espionage and computer misuse charges over WikiLeaks' publication of secret US military documents a decade ago, with a maximum sentence of 175 years in prison. In a new indictment filed in June, prosecutors also say Assange conspired with members of hacking organisations and sought to recruit hackers to provide WikiLeaks with classified information. That indictment expanded the American case against Assange but did not add any new charges. Assange's supporters from their side argue the WikiLeaks founder is a journalist entitled to First Amendment protection. Assange's lawyers say the prosecution is a politically motivated abuse of power that will stifle press freedom and put journalists around the world at risk. Charles de Ledesma, London.
During the hearing, a British judge rejected a request by Assange's lawyers to ignore allegations against him in a U.S. indictment the defense says was sprung on it, quote, out of the blue, end quote. Assange attorney Mark Summers said it was, quote, an impossible task, end quote, for the legal team to deal with the new allegations in time for Monday's court hearing, and that the judge should drop the new allegations. But the judge refused, saying she had offered the defense the chance in August to postpone the hearing, but they declined to do so. Outside the court, WikiLeaks editor-in-chief Kristen Hrafnsson said that until this morning, Assange had not spoken to lawyers for 5 months.
I'm very disappointed with the process so far, but it's only been 2 hours. And that we heard that the judge will limit the time that Julian's lawyers will have to with the witnesses that they are presenting. They will only be allowed half hour each to present or expand on the written witness statement. But while she is limiting Julian's lawyers' ability to present the witnesses, there is no mention that there will be any limitation on the cross-examination on the side of the United States.
Also speaking outside the court, Assange's father, John Shipton, slammed the entire trial.
Well, it's an abuse trial. It's just an abuse. Also, it's extraterritorial application of laws. Also, the First Amendment. Julian is a publisher, a publication is WikiLeaks, and a journalist. It's an oppression of journalism and free press everywhere in the Western world. It can't go on. It has to stop now.
The hearing is expected to take around 5 weeks, with the decision expected about a month later. Leading Belarus opposition activist Maria Kolesnikova and several other members of an opposition council went missing Monday. Their colleagues, speaking to the Associated Press, said they fear they were detained as part of the authorities' efforts to crush nearly a month of protests against the controversial re-election of the country's president, Alexander Lukashenko. Kolesnikova is a member of the Coordination Council created by the opposition to facilitate talks with the president on a transition of power. Kolesnikova was reportedly put on a minibus in the capital, Minsk, and driven away by unidentified people. Her disappearance follows a rally Sunday that drew an estimated 100,000 protesters pushing for the resignation of Lukashenko. Lukashenko extended his 26-year rule in an August 9th election that the opposition says was rigged. As Reuters' Libby Hogan reports, the rally was met with force as people in camouflage worked alongside riot police to beat and detain protesters.
Authorities in Belarus launched a tough crackdown on protests over the weekend. Scores of people were detained after tens of thousands took to the streets calling for President Alexander Lukashenko to step down. They were met by security forces who laid barbed wire on the streets, while military vehicles, water cannons, and plainclothes officers in masks were deployed to try and contain the demonstrations. Protests have carried on for 4 weeks since Lukashenko's re-election, which his opponents say was rigged. Students draped in red and white flags staged several protests on Saturday, chanting "New election." And later in the afternoon, thousands of women held a separate march, carrying signs and shouting, "Hands off the children." Then on Sunday, local news posted several brutal videos showing police detaining protesters and men in plain clothes beating protesters, and even breaking glass of a cafe where protesters were sheltering and dragging people out. At least 100 people were detained, according to Russian news agency Interfax, while other rights groups put the figure at more than 200. Meanwhile, Lukashenko, who has been in power since 1994, still denies electoral fraud. And buoyed by a show of support from traditional ally Russia, he has rejected calls for new elections.
That was Libby Hogan of Reuters. This is VOA. Representatives of Libya's rival governments are in Morocco Monday for a second day of talks. The Moroccan government initiated the talks Sunday to help move the two sides toward a political resolution to years of conflict. Five members of the Tripoli-based Government of National Accord, or GNA, and five from a parliament headquartered in the eastern Libyan city of Tobruk are taking part in the meetings. The two sides last month called a ceasefire and said they would hold elections. Libya has been in chaos since 2011, when a NATO-backed uprising toppled and killed longtime leader Muammar Gaddafi. Almost 300 Rohingya refugees, believed to have been at sea for 6 months, landed in Indonesia Monday. Local police told Reuters that a wooden boat carrying the Rohingya people was spotted by local fishermen several kilometers off the coast. Among the group were 181 women and 14 children. Chris Lewa, director of the nonprofit Arakan Project, said the passengers had set sail from southern Bangladesh at the end of March or early April, bound for Malaysia. But both Malaysian and Thai authorities pushed them back, Lewa said, as borders tightened due to COVID-19. Fleeing persecution in Myanmar and refugee camps in Bangladesh, the Rohingya have for years boarded boats in an attempt to seek refuge in other Southeast Asian nations. Typhoon Haishen slammed into North Korea Monday. North Korea's state-run television KRT showed footage of flooded roads and damaged bridges and houses, Reuters reported. The state broadcaster reported that some residents had been evacuated. In South Korea, at least one person was injured after their car overturned in strong winds in Busan, the country's second-largest city, where there was also flooding, the safety ministry said. More than 1,600 people were evacuated in preparation for the storm, while more than 76 flights at 7 airports, including Jeju International Airport, were canceled. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Activists are urging Australia to restart a refugee program that has left thousands of people stranded overseas. Australia closed its international borders in March because of the coronavirus pandemic. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The Refugee Council of Australia has estimated that about 4,000 refugees with humanitarian visas allowing entry into Australia are currently stranded overseas. They're unable to travel because Australia's international border was closed to foreign nationals in March to curb the spread of COVID-19. David Odish is an Iraqi refugee in Australia. His sister and her family were granted humanitarian visas in January and had planned to reunite with him in March. The family had escaped the Islamic State terror group in their home city of Mosul in northern Iraq and fled to Lebanon, where they remain. Odish says his sister is struggling to survive in a small apartment in Beirut, and he is pleading with the authorities in Canberra to let the family come.
They have all the documents ready, all the approval, and unfortunately what happened, this pandemic, COVID-19, everything stops and the border closed. I hope the Australian government hear our voice and change this decision.
The family has said it has applied twice for special permission from the government in Canberra to fly to Australia. The requests have been denied. Australia's international borders are expected to stay closed until 2021. Campaigners believe refugees should, like citizens and permanent residents, be allowed into the country. The Department for Home Affairs has appeared unmoved. It has said the border restrictions have been successful in slowing the spread of coronavirus in Australia. 12,700 refugees were resettled in Australia in 2018. The majority were from Iraq, with others escaping Myanmar, Syria and Afghanistan. The government has said Australia has one of the world's most generous resettlement programs and has given sanctuary to almost 900,000 refugees since the end of the Second World War. However, its detention of asylum seekers who try to reach Australia by sea in offshore camps in the South Pacific has drawn repeated international condemnation. In response, Canberra has insisted the policies were a deterrent and have prevented migrants risking their lives crossing treacherous waters in unseaworthy vessels. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
India's total COVID-19 infections crossed the 4.2 million mark with over 90,000 new cases recorded Monday. The South Asian giant has now overtaken Brazil as the country with the second highest number of coronavirus cases globally. Only the United States has more cases with over 6.2 million. VOA's Ayan Bior has more with reporting from Reuters.
Doctors at one of Indian capital New Delhi's largest COVID-19 hospitals say they are struggling with fatigue and staff shortages. The 32-bed intensive care unit, or ICU, at the Max Smart Super Specialty Hospital is full. ICU doctor Ronak Mankodi.
Yeah, I guess everybody is mentally exhausted because it requires continuous level of attention and care for the patients coming with, and now that patients are coming even sicker, you need even more attention. So people are getting exhausted of the condition. They do need breaks. Some of our staffs are also getting affected with COVID because of physical exertion and not being able to take care of themselves, not eating properly because of the random shifts that people are working in. So it's troublesome for us as well.
Case numbers are expected to grow. Some Indian cities have reopened underground train services, which were shuttered for months. New Delhi resumed metro rail services after a break of more than 5 months. Bars will open starting Wednesday in the capital. On New Delhi streets, resident Priyanka Solanki says the new tally is alarming.
It's very threatening, means every time we are in fear that somehow we'll catch the infection, and also the treatments are still not available for the common people. So it's not a good situation. No one is happy and no one is at peace.
Another resident, Umesh Prasad, says citizens are not following public health measures. He says the entire purpose of the lockdown implemented by the government was to educate the people so that they understand the means, ways and methods to deal with it. But the people here in our country do not listen. They think others are getting infected from coronavirus, but they will not get affected by it. He says the numbers are surging daily because of this misplaced sense of overconfidence and complacency. India's government says rising infections also reflect higher rates of testing nationwide, adding that high recovery rates show its strategy of testing, tracing, and treatment is working. The government says the situation is under control, given India's large population compared to the number of cases. But one resident of Ghaziabad, just outside New Delhi, calls for another lockdown. He says our country has come to the number two spot now, because of which we are facing tremendous losses. And now they are left with no rules of social distancing, no specific laws or lockdown. So obviously, cases are rising. He says he appeals to the government to reimpose lockdown and all those restrictions. If not, he says, a very troublesome situation lies ahead. A severe lockdown in March shuttered businesses, leaving millions without jobs and slashing India's gross domestic product. Ayan Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
After months with ships languishing in harbor because of COVID-19, some cruises have resumed in Italy with new safety protocols on board. MSC Cruises was the first to return to the Mediterranean with its MSC Grandiosa cruise liner, and Costa Cruises followed Sunday when its Costa Deliziosa set sail for a week-long cruise in Italy from the northern town of Trieste. Sabina Castelfranco has more for VOA.
COVID-19 has seriously affected the cruising industry, but gradually its operations are restarting in Italy, with passengers booking cruises that have a series of new safety protocols in place. The Italian government gave the green light to cruising companies to resume their sailings last month. However, as the numbers of coronavirus infections have resumed their upward trend in Italy, after having been low during the summer, there are concerns in the cruising industry about how long the ships will continue to sail. MSC Grandiosa was the first large ship to set sail from the port of Genoa in August, with around 2,500 passengers and staff on board, no longer at full capacity. Testing for COVID-19 was mandatory for everyone on the ship before departure. Posters now explain the health requirements, including hand sanitizing and temperature checks. New safety measures on the ships also require wearing protective masks in all indoor spaces and outdoors where social distancing is not possible. Customers boarding the ship express satisfaction with the strict protocols. This customer said the rules are very clear and cruise staff ensure that they are respected. He expressed the hope that it will continue to be this way because it is a security guarantee for everyone. Gianni Onorato, CEO of MSC Cruises, explained that the company's objective is providing a safe environment on board, which will build customer confidence. Onorato said passengers are no longer allowed to disembark independently from the ships for visits ashore, but only for protected organized excursions where buses have been previously sanitized and drivers and guides are tested the morning the ship arrives. He added that none of the services on board have been cancelled, just adapted, like buffets, which are now being served, just like in hotels in Italy. He also said there are some 250 empty cabins available if guests need to self-isolate. Like MSC, Costa Cruises also resumed cruising on Sunday with initial sailings only for Italian nationals. Management of cruising companies all cite the great sense of responsibility they have towards their guests in their efforts to resume and continue to operate their cruises. Italy was one of the first countries in the world to resume cruising, but TUI Cruises and Hapag-Lloyd also recently concluded inaugural cruises with no city stopovers from Hamburg. Some of the cruises that have resumed sailing have experienced COVID scares. Dozens of passengers and crew on Hurtigruten's Roald Amundsen tested positive recently for COVID-19, forcing the company to cancel any further sailings. Many of the big names in the cruising world, including Royal Caribbean, Carnival Cruise Line and Norwegian Cruise Line, have cancelled all or nearly all their sailings until the end of October, if not later. The financial impact and job losses on the industry is expected to be huge. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
That's it for our show today. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and the entire International Edition team, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thank you for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
On the first Monday of September every year, the United States pauses to honor its workers and the contributions they make to our nation's prosperity. On September 5th, 1882, more than 10,000 men and women paraded through the streets of Manhattan to celebrate the first Labor Day. New York Central Labor Union organized the day of celebration in honor of the workers who fought to secure higher wages, shorter hours, and better working conditions for laborers. It was a day of celebration, but also a day of sacrifice. The workers sacrificed that day's wages to demonstrate their commitment to gaining fair compensation for hard work. This year, the COVID-19 pandemic has created new challenges for working people, problems unlike anything we have seen in the past. While millions have for months been working from home to prevent the spread of the coronavirus, hundreds of thousands were called upon to fight the disease. Emergency personnel and medical professionals put their lives on the line to aid the sick and comfort the dying. And indeed, hundreds of healthcare workers have paid for their dedicated service with their lives. And then there are the millions of others, many of them working in low-paying jobs, who stepped up to keep the country going. Food still has to be grown, processed, delivered, and sold so others can eat. Mail still needs to be transported across the country, sorted, and delivered. Those who keep power plants and water treatment stations going are no less important to the survival of the rest than our political leaders across the country who organize a response to the spread of the coronavirus or find new ways to obtain scarce protective gear and medical supplies. In this hour of need, the world has once again witnessed the unbeatable strength of the United States of America, said President Donald Trump. All across our land, heroes have raced into action. Doctors and nurses are enduring sleepless nights to save every possible life. Farmers, truck drivers, and grocers are working to keep our shelves stocked and our people fed. Families are helping neighbors in need, and entire communities are rallying together to defeat the plague, he said. But as a tribute to this country and the people of our country, what they've been able to do and the amount of lives that have been saved.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Join us each week on Upfront as we discuss a range of topics. The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
Eliminate the mentality that girls cannot do what boys can do.
You basically need to go to school. There's just no way you're going to get all the skills that people want from you or they expect from you if you're not at school.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekly